Welcome back to Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. And you all are joining Doc Bill and I today as we share our experience along America's Last Frontier. Now, I'm not talking about the reality show, although the reality show really captures it really well, Doc Bill. Really the lifestyle and the day-to-day life of folks living up there in Alaska.
True, true. And again, this show focuses on Alaska from actually visiting it, not from a cruise ship perspective.
And not from a reality show.
Actually going to and meeting the people in the small towns, the people that, you know, that basically make things work on it, make things work in the state.
But, you know, when you think of Alaska as the last frontier, it's because of some of the conditions, the brutal winters, that vast distance between cities, ice-covered lakes and rivers. And, you know, because of those extreme conditions, day-to-day life, especially during the winter months, can be really brutal. And people in the past and still today have depended on dogs as their main source of transportation along some of these rugged roads and really difficult areas to pass through, because the dogs could get through when the cars and other things couldn't get through.
And we mean dogs, not pocket dogs or foo-foo dogs. Real dogs.
We mean those real dogs. We mean those dogs that can run 1,000 miles and get you there safely. So absolutely, those big husky dogs that you'll find in Alaska. So I had a chance to visit the kennel of some of these husky dogs at a place called the Iditarod Sledding. You can go there and you can have an experience of going dog sledding and have a chance to see what it's kind of like in order to, you know, to live that type of life. I spoke with one of the owners of Iditarod Sledding, Danny Sive, and he's actually the grandson of one of the founders of the Iditarod Trail Races. Now, the Iditarod Races takes place in March, over 1,000 miles from Anchorage to Nome, and it covers really every Alaskan terrain from three different mountain ranges through the tundra and the gold mining area down 200 miles of the Yukon River and along the Bering Sea coast. I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, it was hard for me to even picture that. But most of the terrain is along like these ice-covered rivers, which is how people live during the winter, and they've depended on dogs and sledding throughout the years. Now, of course, you know, we have the snowmobiles now, but a lot of people still depend on their dogs to get them places. So I asked Danny about the strategy of getting from start to finish.
1,000 miles. Most of them are local villages, either hunting fishing lodges or either Athabascan or Eskimo villages along the trail. And most of them are populated year round. And so when we come to these checkpoints, we can either choose to stop and rest or continue on. You don't have to stay there. But that's the strategy of the Iditarod. And that's the fascinating part. Of course, the more you rest, the more well-maintained your dog team is and the faster they can run. Of course, the less you rest, the further ahead you are in the race, and that's a balancing act. And over the course of 1,000 miles, typically the turtle wins.
Danny's grandfather was one of the co-founders, as I mentioned, and I asked him to tell us the history of the trail and what it was really like living on the trail.
The Iditarod Trail is historically significant for several reasons, and my grandpa is the president of the National Historic Trails Association in Alaska, and he can tell you all about it too. But the original Iditarod Trail was the Seward to Iditarod Mail Trail. It was about a 400-mile trail to the gold boom town of Iditarod, where they discovered gold in a little creek on Christmas Day of 1908. And it was near, and I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but there was an Athabascan tribe roughly translated as Iditarodi in the area. And so the European translation became Iditarod, and it was the Iditarod Gold Strike. And so merchants in Seward built a trail to this gold strike to make sure that all that gold and so forth would come out through Seward. As I'm sure you know, especially in the placer mining era, not much of the gold ever actually made it home, right? It made it to the closest town. Mm-hmm. And Seward's goal was to be the closest town, and it worked. And then that trail was extended to wherever the current gold boom was, eventually all the way to Nome. At one point, Nome had 25,000 people, and Wyatt Earp was running the saloon. If you go there now, there's not 20% of that. But that was a huge part of Alaska's history.
There's also a story about a well-known dog called Balto, and he's celebrated as a dog who brought the much-needed medicine to the town of Nome during a blinding snowstorm with very, very, very limited ability to see the trail. And Balto brought that medicine through into the town, saved lives. And Danny shares the Balto story, which is a fabulous story. It's very heartwarming.
Yes, the most well-known mushing event is the Serum Run. It's the story of Balto. He was the lead dog that carried diphtheria serum to Nome. It was actually a relay of some 20 teams from Nenana over many portions of the Iditarod Trail to Nome as well. And that's, I think there's a statue of Balto in Central Park in New York, and the dog is stuffed in Cleveland, and there's all kinds of movies and books about Balto, so we get asked about him all day long. And so again, that was another big event for dog sledding in Alaska, and that's certainly part of what the Iditarod commemorates.
But when you hear the story of Balto, it really does make you wonder really about this race. Is it a race of man against nature, animal against nature? What is this race really about? And when I asked Danny about that, he said it's really all about the dogs. And it's truly a dog race. And the mushers, it's more like they're the coach. So when I thought about that, I really wanted to know from him, sort of then what is that relationship like? Because if you're like me and you love dogs, you love them because they're like your house pets. But for them, it's something a little something different. So here's what he had to say about that.
Absolutely. But again, when I have a favorite dog, it's not like my kids. You saw I have three beautiful daughters, and I can't even begin to compare my dogs with my kids. I don't even, that's not a blurry line for me. However, I also have 30-something coworkers, and I view my dogs more like teammates or coworkers or something like that. And especially something like the Iditarod it's pretty hard. It's almost more like a traumatic experience where when you've been through this with somebody, you have a tighter bond or a connection. And so I think I have a level of respect for these dogs that can only be gained by seeing them do something amazing. I've seen dogs do things that you wouldn't believe if I told you. It's just, how in the world would that dog? He dragged me for 14 miles out of spit where I could not even stand up over the sled. The average wind speed is 51 miles an hour in our head. Humans can't even hardly stand up at 51 mile an hour wind. This dog just 14 miles puts his head down, and we had him and 14 other little puppies that had never been on a race before. And if it had been up to them, we'd have been looking for the closest place to get out of the wind. But here's one big tough old dog going in front, and that lends confidence to all the rest of the puppies. And I have no idea how that dog even was able to tell where we were going. I had no idea where we were going. They're supposed to be trail markers. You're supposed to be able to see two or three at a time. I saw one the entire 14 miles, and it was down. I ran over it. It was like, oh, whew, I guess we must be on the trail. Other than that, I have no idea where we were going. So he's not only navigating, which it's well known that animals have some sort of built-in GPS, something. We don't know what it is, but how does a turtle end up on the same beach or whatever? Exactly. So this dog has done the Iditarod race. I believe that was his ninth time. He knew where that checkpoint was. He knew. How do you even run into 50-something mile an hour wind? I can't tell you the number of times we were blown down, blown sideways, wrapped up around something. And every time I'm thinking, surely this is it. He's just going to say, nuts to this. Let's camp. Every time he doesn't even think about it, just stands back up and away he goes. And at that point, I'm almost hoping he stops. It's like, I'm ready to stop. He just puts his head down and goes. And so the relationship that I have with that dog is, it's of the utmost respect you can have. And so it's different than a pet parent or a, certainly I said not even on par with the children. It's not a, I mean, love doesn't even, that's not even in the right category. It's more like a, I mean, I imagine, yeah, or I imagine, I mean, you hate to get too dramatic, but certainly, I'm sure many soldiers have connections where you've been through something that was scary or hard, and hey, this guy was there with me the whole time. And that's more the relationship that we have with the dogs.
You see, I discovered that they do not see dogs as most of us do, like pets, like children. You know, their dogs are their partners. They're partners with their dog. And it's a culture where dogs are needed for survival. And you can understand that by listening to this story. But certainly, that's definitely a special dog, that Ditka that he talks about. And I mean, I have my Jack, so I really understand that, how dogs can really stand out and have a very special place in your heart. So if you go to Seward, I would definitely say that you want to check out the Iditarod dog sledding. I mean, because it was just a fantastic way to see the kennel, see all of the dogs, have a chance to meet the dogs. And go to my website, Travel Bags with Anita, because you can see a picture of Ditka there. And he's that dog that Danny talks about that brought him through that snowstorm. I mean, it's a fantastic story. So definitely check that out. But now today's show is brought to you by the Sapelo Island Birdhouses. You can go down there. You can bring your pet. You can bring your dog down there. And you can bring that pet that is more like your children. Because if your pets are like my pets, my three dogs are my children. And I like to take them everywhere I can go. So I'm always looking for those destinations that are pet friendly. And the Sapelo Island Birdhouses are pet friendly. They have three cottages where you can bring your canine babies and have them come along, have some fun on the beach, go hiking with them, and just have a great time with the full family and not leaving those puppies behind at home. So check out their website at sapeloislandbirdhouses.com or give them a call at 912-223-6515 and let them know that you want to bring your Fido with you on vacation. And they can share with you what cottages are available that allow pets. Now, this has been a great show. I hope we have inspired you to consider Alaska as one of your next destinations. Check out our website at Travel Bags with Anita, because we will have pictures. I'll have all of the links to the websites that we've mentioned. And hey, you may be inspired and your next great destination may be to the last frontier. Thanks for joining us today. It's been a great show having you guys with us today. Check back with us in 2 weeks. We'll have another great destination. You're on Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Thanks for being with us today. Bye-bye.